a guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, are delighted to welcome along Graham Barnstable. Graham, thanks for joining us.
That's my pleasure. I know Andy's been trying to get me on for a while, so I'm delighted to be here at last.
Well, no game to reflect on this week, but still plenty of talking points. I suppose, Jay, the major one being that European football is now off the cards, despite not having kicked a ball this weekend. Rangers defeating Celtic in the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup put an end to a European dream. I suppose if we rewind a couple of months, it was nothing but a dream, but it's a shame to see it end tonight.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I suppose going into these games, you still want there to be something to play for, and of course there is. You want to finish as high up the table as you possibly can. When it's out with your hands, as you know, with the cup, then you know there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. So, yeah, slightly disappointing that we're going into these last few games, knowing that even if we finish fourth, there's no European football to be had. But by the same token, you're right. We're now in the top six, which is a great achievement in itself, and it would still be great to finish as high up the table as possible.
Graham, man. I know from being on the inside of the club, you'll know the financial implications of finishing in the top six. And the extra money that comes with that will be crucial going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the prize money, I think it jumps to just over £100,000 a place. So to know that you're going to get at least the sixth place prize money at worst will be a big help this season. And if we get to fourth, I think that would probably be on the dreams of the board. Even a few months ago, I'm sure they must be making contingency plans in February about bottom six and maybe even relegation at one point. So I'm not sure if this is all bonus money, but it's certainly at least money I think they wouldn't have been expecting a couple of months ago. So to make the top six and get to fourth would just be massive financially. Could maybe even turn a loss back into profit for once.
Buster, I was quite surprised to talk to you over the weekend, and you were saying you didn't really believe that we would have deserved Europe and it would have been European place by default rather than actually earning it. What was your thinking behind that point?
Well, I don't think I says we didn't deserve it. I did say, you know, it'd been by default, sort of. It's just, I think it's something to be earned, and when you sneak in the back door, so to speak, because the cup winners are in the another competition, I think it moved the goalposts slightly for the qualifying places, which, don't get me wrong, I'd have been delighted to be. But the season we've had, European football was no something that any of us were expecting to be coming anywhere close to. So I'm not too disappointed that it's, you know, it's now gone. It was out with our hands anyway, as being said. But it's not something that I wouldn't say we wouldn't have deserved it. It's just I don't like the way it sort of would have sort of, as I say, defaulted into that position there again.
So, Jay, that being said, five games to go, prize money at stake and fourth place at stake, but no European football. How does Mark McGee approach these last five games? Does he give some of the guys that are on the brink in terms of contract status a go and give these guys a chance to prove themselves? Does he stick with the tried and tested and and try and ensure we get as many points on the board as possible. It's quite an interesting one, and it will be interesting to see how the manager does approach these last five games.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the fact that European football is no longer possible, I don't think will change anything in terms of how we approach the games. I would like to think we'll be trying to pick up as many points as we possibly can, trying to finish fourth. And of course, even if we'd finished fourth, you know, there's still not really any guarantees there. So I can understand the idea. You know, you've kind of just secured top six that wasn't expected. You now have games where you can kind of think of them as bonus fixtures or something like that. And so it might be tempting to throw in young players and perhaps allow some young players who are out of contract in the summer a chance to win a new deal. I don't tend to go in for that. I think that in terms of, you know, we've already mentioned the prize money, even if European football isn't an option anymore, I still think that even in terms of professional pride and things like that, we're in a position at the moment where we've been into the top six in fourth place, and I would like to think that the objective is to finish the season in fourth place. I don't think there needs to be any, you know, sacrificing of points or sacrificing of results to give young players a gig. Obviously, it'd be great if, you know, over the next few weeks, if there is the opportunity to throw in a young player here or there, or give someone a bit more extra time from the bench, then great, that's fantastic. But priority for me is still going to have to, we still should be going into these games looking to win. The only one situation, or the only one example that would perhaps change my view slightly is in terms of Jack Leach. I think that Jack Leach, in my opinion, is a good player, has a lot of potential. I think that come the end of the season when his contract's up, I would quite like to see him stay on, but Mark McGee might not feel as though he's earned it. But I think that if we could maybe get Jack Leach in the first team for the next few weeks and allow him the chance to earn a deal, I would be supportive of that. But that's also because Morgamo Gomez, for me, shouldn't be in the team. I think he's been incredibly poor since he joined the club. If we have absolutely no interest in keeping him on by the summer, then there's no point in playing him. The game on Saturday in particular was just absolutely horrendous. It looks as though, I can't make my mind up whether it's just his style of play or whether he just doesn't, you know, he just couldn't care less. I've never seen a player so lackadaisical in possession, wanting so much time. And I think that, you know, the opportunity in that situation is to drop Morgamo Gomez because he doesn't deserve to be in the team, and then give Jack Leach the last five fixtures, presuming he's playing well. Obviously, if he doesn't play well enough, you drop him, and presuming he stays fit and doesn't get suspended. But for Jack Leach, I think there is an opportunity there for the last five games. Bring him in instead of Gomez, give him a chance to win a new deal. So in the Jack Leach, yes, I'm fully supportive of giving him a chance. But I think, by and large, I would still like to think that we get into these fixtures full strength side, if possible, looking to win as many points as possible and looking to finish fourth.
Graham, looking at the guys that are out of contract, I would say that Leach is possibly the only guy that McGee hasn't given sufficient game time to kind of assess where he's at. The rest have all been given an opportunity, with the exception of Craig Moore, who's been out on loan at United all season. Would you be in the same boat as Jay and give him these last five games to prove his worth?
I've got some sympathy with what Jay said, but I think when we have another player who needs the five games just as much and who plays in a similar position as Stephen Pearson, who could be back, I guess, on Saturday. He was talking of being close to being back for the Celtic game. I know Steve's at a different stage in his career, but he probably needs the five games under his belt again before the end of the season as well. So it's a kind of tough call. Do you play the two of them and give Keith Lashley five games out? Do you spell the two of them? I don't know. I think Jack does deserve a bit of time. I don't think he's ever let us down when he's played. I do remember a game against Celtic with Bob in the middle of the park a year or so ago. The couple of games he's played in recent weeks, he hasn't let us down either. I agree with Jay again. I'd probably rather see him play in front of Morgado Gomez, who's been a massive disappointment for me too, because I used to think him and Wabin were brilliant together at United and also together at Hearts last season. So Gomez has been a disappointment, but I'm just torn between giving Jack time and Stephen Pearson time.
Yeah, I suppose Buster as well, the other one that McGee perhaps hasn't made his mind up about is Keith Lashley, who is out of contract as well. So there's a lot of competition and a lot at stake for these guys in the last five games.
Yeah, there certainly is. I don't think there's
too much danger of Keith being told he's no got a future. You know, whether it be maybe he takes a wee tiny step back in the playing part and he, you know, steps into the coaching a bit more. But, you know, I think as Keith said to ourselves a couple of weeks ago, he's looking to continue playing. There's times where I feel he is still our best midfielder, so I don't think there's too much of the I don't think there's too much of doubt that he'll still be a player here next year. Just depends obviously on, you know, what sort of terms he's offered and what sort of terms he's looking for.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how we go in the starting 11 wise and Saturday and then going forward. The other guys looking at the list, David Clarkson's got a 1 year option. Very much doubt that that will be taken up. David Ferguson's been in loan at Airdrie again. Is it Airdrie he's been out at? Yeah. An unknown, that one, I suppose. Wes Fletcher, you would doubt would be kept on. And then you go to the more experienced guys like Stevie Hamill, Keith Lasley, Stephen McManus, Scott McDonald's got a 1 year option. You would, again, the experienced heads, you would kind of hope that would be there to supplement the younger guys coming through. Then it's Craig Moore and Craig Sampson. Great to see Craig Moore do so well and he's on spell at Ayr United, but the difference is, I suppose, whether he can make the step up. Just, we'll go on and talk about the top six fixtures, which weren't released when we last recorded with Louis Moult. It's given us two home games, a home game against Hearts and a home game against St Johnstone, while we'll travel to Aberdeen, Celtic in the last day of the season, and then an absolutely ridiculous bit of scheduling where we go to Dingwall on a Wednesday night for a fixture against Ross County. Jay, they took a few days to get these fixtures out, and then when they eventually do release them, they come up with scheduling like that, which is baffling, really. I think if it was Celtic, for instance, there would be uproar about this fixture. It's really unfair on the supporters. We want to get along to as many games as possible, but it renders it nigh on impossible for someone that's working to get along. It's pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, it's not unexpected, though. You know, those who run our game are incredibly inept and have been for many years now, so it's not a surprise in the slightest. But you're right, once again, the fans are the ones who missed out, the ones who are kind of forgotten about, the ones who aren't taking into consideration whatsoever. Playing a Wednesday night fixture in Dingwall is a ridiculous decision. You know, Motherwell fans are like any fans of any other club. They want to go and see their team home and away if possible. Obviously, you know, there are people who can't make certain amount of games because of finances and all that, but there's still fans there who want to go to games no matter where they're playing. They want to go home and away and cheer on their team, and doing it on a Wednesday night in Dingwall is just absolutely mental. There's never any consideration given to fans whatsoever, and this is just another example of it, unfortunately. But unfortunately, it is just a symptomatic, you know, it's just a symptom of being run by, you know, clueless morons who don't really take into consideration the actual supporters. So, yes, it's disappointing. I think, you know, we kind of spoke about how we could get there, and I think we've kind of ruled it out now because it's just not really possible to go up on the Wednesday night with work and things like that. So, yeah, it's disappointing, but unfortunately, it's just something we need to accept.
Can I just make a small defence for the morons, Jay? Somebody's got to play them up there. And it's never an easy journey for any team. It's maybe more, maybe the morons have got to look at the midweek fixtures as a whole. Somebody's got to play Ross County up there, or Ross County have got to travel somewhere. So whether it be us, Aberdeen, it's not an easy journey for Aberdeen. St Johnstone is an hour closer than us, but it's still not going to be easy for them either. So somebody's got to play them. And maybe we've got to look at the midweek fixtures as a whole. I've played them up there in midweek this season already. That's probably the nonsense, is the fact that I'm playing midweek as often, and then that means people from Inverness have got to travel down here on a Wednesday, or people from Ross County have got to come down here on a Wednesday or a Tuesday. It's maybe the midweek fixtures that's the problem.
Oh no, I'd agree with that. I mean, you just need to look at you know, our fixture at Pittodrie that was moved to a Friday night not too long ago. Yeah, I mean, it's farcical. There's never any consideration given to football fans who are working to earn the money to go and support their team. So because they're working, they can't make a game because it's midweek. It's a farce.
I know it was given very late notice, but it's a free weekend there, just after the fixtures were announced. If they had been announced in the Saturday night after the games had finished, and when they could have had the fixtures ready to go, then they could have perhaps rescheduled it for them midweek, and we could have bashed on and travelled on the Saturday, which would have been a much better option, surely.
On Saturday, we had no games because of the Cup semi-finals. In the end, only two Premiership teams played in it. So, 10 teams were idle because of two. I think they could have known that when they put the fixtures together, you were saying, Andy, and we could have gone to Dingwall on Saturday, and I think people would have... That would have been much more palatable to people.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, also from a club's point of view, more fans mean more revenue and it'd be a financial boost. What kind of crowd are going to be there second last game of the season with, albeit it could maybe be fourth versus fifth, but is that really a significant thing for fans? I would say that finishing fourth is possibly a bigger thing for the club themselves than it is actually any of the supporters.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Andy. I think that we'll be lucky if we take a busload up. No, we'll be lucky if we can get 30, 40 people to go up to that one. I don't know what Ross County's attends, because they tend to bring people from all over Rossshire as well, so it might be just as tricky for their home fans, believe it or not. So there might be a crowd of less than 2,000 there, which won't suit Ross County either, or maybe they could get 3,500 to 4,000 on a Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. What about in terms of yourself doing the commentary for Motherwell? Is that a possible option for you? Or again, because you'll get it open all weeks, but...
I've taken a half day from my work to go up, and I'll drive up and I'll drive back down afterwards. I don't know when I'll get home, and I'll be up at 6 in the morning and go back to work the next morning and be like a zombie through the Thursday. But I'm prepared for that. That's just one of the things I enjoy doing it, so I'm just going to have to take the hit for a half day and a long day on the Thursday.
Well, I suppose that's a nice bonus to hear that we'll actually be able to have some sort of coverage of the game. I know the open all mics coverage will be available, but to actually have comprehensive biased coverage is always quite nice. we'll maybe talk about Marvin Johnson's winner at Inverness a wee bit later on and quite how dirty these dirty looks were.
I think I'm getting t-shirts made up with that, won't it?
Buster, another thing that came from the Scottish Cup semi-finals this weekend was a lot of discussion about Hampden. I saw Jim Spence being particularly scathing of the facilities and the pitch, and just generally believing that Hampden was now redundant and the National Stadium wasn't fit for purpose. I'm kind of a bit torn on it, I must say. I've had a few decent experiences at Hampden, a few less desirable visits as well. The big thing for me, semi-finals being played at Hampden, I don't think is right. I think that the reward of reaching a final should be you play at the National Stadium. It should be a one-off fixture. You've got the case now that Hibs will have played three times at Hampden by the time they've competed in the Scottish Cup final. Rangers playing the Petrofac final at Hampden. I think the League Cup, the Scottish Cup finals should both be held at Hampden, and regardless of who is in the semi-finals, the fixtures should take place, whether it be a toss of the coin or something. I know that the cynics and the doubters would believe that there was some sort of corruption in the toss of the coin, but I really believe that it shouldn't be used as often as it is. I don't know how you get around the Queen's Park issue. That's a whole different story. But what's your take, firstly, on Hampden as a fan that visits on a semi-regular basis for Scotland games or for Motherwell games on the rare occasion that we have a cup run?
Well, yeah, you mentioned that, you know, a few different things there, the pitch, the stadium, and whether or not it should be used at certain points. The actual stadium in itself, I've always enjoyed myself every time I've went there. I understand as you go closer to the park, the views aren't that good, but I've always felt the atmosphere can be great. The views I always get are good as well, you know, because I don't sit in the first couple of rows. I know that maybe some people might not have a choice in that, but I think, you know, as a national stadium, I enjoy it. I think it's a great place to go. as you say, you're always there for a for an occasion, whether it be, you know, a final, a Scotland game, or as you mentioned, maybe a semi-final or something like that as well. The actual pitch, they seem to be having a bit of problems with it the last couple of years. You know, there's a couple of people moaned about it basically, but you know, I watched the old Firm game or whatever you want to call it there at the weekend there as well, and I noticed they were all talking about the turf moved the ball up for the last boy's penalty, and you know that's basically a bit shite. But as I say, I don't know how you solve that other than, I mean, was that because they just relayed the pitch a couple of weeks ago or whatever? But yeah, I kind of do agree with you where you're, you know, maybe it shouldn't really be a semi-final venue. Depending on who it is that's going there, how many people are going to be going, you know, I can see your point there, but I don't really have an argument against that. But I think, you know, depending again, if you're a team like, I don't know, say for example a championship team, other than obviously Rangers and Hibs this year because they're, you know, two of the bigger teams in the country, but if you're a championship team, you get to that sort of semi-final stage of a Scottish Cup, you know, it could be the only time that you get anywhere near Hampden. You know, is it something that you want to take away for them as well? But I get what you're saying there, but as a showpiece stadium, you know, I enjoy Hampden. I think it's good. I do think it is fit for purpose. I think that there is an atmosphere, but it's obviously to do with the fans making the atmosphere. So I don't see any problem with having, you know, as you say, like Hampden as the national stadium, and those talks of that paper talk and stuff are like maybe not really doing the starting again, but I don't see that. I don't think that'd be worth it.
Jay, that's something that just isn't an option, I would imagine, and the SFA have got anywhere near enough budget to rip Hampden up and start again. But even size wise, I think it's a bit of an issue when you've got Rangers and Celtic playing yesterday, and both sets of fans have got more season ticket holders than there were tickets available for them. It means that people are going to miss out. And I suppose that's slightly unfair when you've followed your team as much as you can over the course of the season, certainly to all the home games. You then miss out when it comes to what arguably was the biggest game of both teams' season yesterday.
Well, I mean, it's slightly unfair in that events that attract big crowds are unfair when people want tickets. It's, you know, whether it's a festival, a gig or a football match, whether it was Motherwell at Ibrox in the first leg of the playoff, no matter what it was, Rangers fans coming to Fir Park for the second leg of the playoff, you know, we all took, you know, quite a lot of glee out of the idea that there was Rangers fans unable to get tickets for Fir Park. But, you know, that's what happens. You know, if you have a big event, which yesterday unfortunately was, people miss out. It's what happens. In terms of Hampden as a stadium, I'm with Buster. I like Hampden. I think it's a peculiarly sort of Scottish idea that, you know, if we're not slating the national stadium, we'll be slating the national anthem and how shit that is, or we'll slate something else. You know, I think we should actually be quite pleased that we've got a very decent stadium. I don't have any issues with Hampden at all. Like Buster pointed out, the first few rows, I think, are a little bit dodgy for views and things like that. But I love Hampden. As a big Scotland fan, you know, home and away, I have, you know, that kind of sentimental feeling for Hampden. You know, I don't have an issue. I think it's the right size for a population, for a country, the population of you know, just over 5 million or just under 6 million. Hampden, a 50,000-seater stadium, I think is fine. And, you know, I don't have any issues. For me, it's pretty much a non-issue. I think it's more just moaning for the sake of moaning. The pitch itself is poor. I think it's been poor for quite a while, and I think they need to get that sorted. But in terms of a stadium, I think it's fine. And in terms of people missing out on tickets, unfortunately, that's just what happens when you're talking about a big event.
Graham, it's kind of a split opinion there so far, so we'll let you cast the deciding vote with your view on it. But it's certainly something that's heated up and really caught the attention in the last couple of weeks. And I would imagine that's a lot to do with the fact that Rangers were playing Celtic yesterday at Hampden Park. But in terms of, as someone that goes a lot to the Scotland games yourself, you've been to many semi-finals, even if Motherwell aren't involved.
Yeah.
How do you find it to visit, and do you believe there is room for improvement there?
Well, a bit like the other two guys, I've got a long emotional attachment to Hampden. I've been going there since about 1970, 1971, so a lot longer than you guys have been alive. And I used to love the old Hampden when it was almost falling to bits with the terrace and the old ash terrace and with the wood sleepers falling apart. You get soaked if you weren't in what's traditionally known as the Rangers End. So I've been through it, but it was a real tip, to be honest. The only regret I've got about Hampden was that when they rebuilt it way back in the day, they didn't do what Celtic did at Celtic Park and what Rangers did at Ibrox, and take do away with the running track and bring the stands in closer to the pitch. But apart from that, that's about the only thing I would complain about. I think I went to the Scotland Denmark game. I was in the north stand. Didn't have a problem at all. I had a great view. I enjoyed the atmosphere, and I think Buster's right. It's down to the fans to create the atmosphere. A stadium doesn't create an atmosphere. You could have the crappiest old stadium in the world. It can still create an atmosphere if you get the fans are prepared to put the effort in. No, we've seen that at Fir Park recently. It's not the greatest stadium in the world, but the boys have managed to make an atmosphere out of it, and I think that's the thing about it. As for the pitch, I think we need to do what Murrayfield have done and try and invest in the hybrid pitch so that it doesn't get the wear it's been getting in recent years. But as a stadium, 50,000 as well, apart from when Rangers play Celtic, it's usually ideal. Jay's right, it's supply and demand. Now, we see so many games where it's half empty, half full, depending on where your glass is. But I think it's perfect size. The only slight thing is parking around about it for me, but you've just got to deal with that, haven't you? And most of the grounds in Scotland are like that. So no real issue with it, to be honest, just apart from I wish back in the day they had pulled the stands closer to the pitch.
Just a final one in this. Queen's Park, I know historically it's been their home, it is their home. Is there any real sense in them playing as many games as they do at Hampden? Could they perhaps be moved elsewhere coming towards the back end of the season when, to the inconvenience of maybe 500-600 supporters, and move them along the road to Lesser Hampden or an alternative venue close by? And maybe that would be a major help to the pitch when you're just recovering from the winter months. It just gives the park a bit more time and a bit more leeway to be fixed, rather than every second Saturday it being dug up by a League Two fixture.
I understand what you're saying, but I think it's a bit patronising. It's a bit of a condescending way to talk. You know, the way we would kind of feel about being referred to as diddy clubs and things like that by Rangers and Celtic fans, I think there's an element of that. It's Queen's Park's home stadium, and they are welcome to play in it. They're welcome to play their home fixtures there because it's their stadium to play in.
Well, you say they're welcome. I don't want them there.
But no, I don't have an issue with that. I think nowadays, there should be better, you know, maintaining the stadium, the pitch itself, and things like that. I think there are a lot of flaws in the way the pitch has been maintained, rather than teams playing on it. I don't think there should be an issue. You look even down south. You watch some, if you watch some English games, even near the tail end of the season, and some of the pitches down there are immaculate, even though they've been played on all season. I think that there's questions that need to be asked about the pitch, but I don't think, you know, Queen's Park playing on it on a regular basis has any bearing. In terms of, you know, things going on at the stadium that shouldn't be or should be moved, the only one in recent memory was Robbie Williams playing at Hampden in the Scotland Faroes game, having to get played at Celtic Park. That was an absolute farce. But in terms of Queen's Park playing their home fixtures at their home stadium, I don't think there's any issues there.
I'll tell you what as well about that. The guys on UBC Scotland, we'll talk about this the other week, I think, when the pitch was relayed or whatever it was, and they were talking about the SFA's lease on Hampden and how it was like a 100-year lease that was signed. But they were saying it's either up this year or next year or something. So if Queen's Park are going rid of the SFA, you know, their lease is up in the next year or two or something. So I don't imagine Queen's Park will be able to run Hampden, but, you know, you're saying get rid of Queen's Park, it could be the other way about.
Certainly would be interesting. We'll look into Saturday's game against Hearts. it feels like a while since we last played, the 2-1 defeat to Celtic. Bust the Hearts have had a fantastic first season back in the top flight. The previous meeting at Fir Park was a very entertaining fixture, a 2-2 draw. We'll not dwell too much in the following fixture at Tynecastle. This should be a good game, one to look forward to.
It should, as you said, you know, Hearts are a good side. They went about it the right way, obviously, for the sort of went tits up. They seem to have done everything, you know, correctly. They gave their youth a chance when they got relegated. I believe there's still two or three of them playing there. They've, you know, got their fan ownership thing happening with, you know, Ann Budge or whoever it is, you know, at the head of it. It's all running pretty smoothly for them. They've been able to, you know, even sell on a guy who had 3 months left in his contract for £1 million. They seem to be, everything's coming up roses for them. But as you say, it'll be a good game. I don't even count the Celtic game. I can't mind that even what we played like, to be honest with you. It was just one of the things where Celtic came to town, we got beat, and then you just forget it. So I don't even know how Muller are going to play, how they're going to turn up. Mercado Gomez, is Mercado Gomez going to get a game against Hearts? I doubt that will happen, to be honest with you. That's a good point.
Because he's been come.
That's what I was going to say. It's maybe one of those things where maybe Jack Leach or, you know, as you mentioned yourself, Graham Pirro will be back, whatever, but maybe he'll not be allowed to play. So if Jay was in charge, he probably wouldn't be allowed to play, but, you know, maybe Hearts won't let him play either. So it'll be good to see, but again, we are form over the season as effectively sneaking into the top six. You know, Hearts, Aberdeen and Celtic really are the you know, the teams that were beating everybody else, and that's why they're miles ahead of everybody else. So it'll be a tough game, but one we can all look forward to.
Graham, when you actually look back at the stats from round about February last year, our home form's been fairly impressive. We've been pretty solid at home, with the exception of just one or two blips. I think Fir Park's now a place that the teams don't relish coming to, and particularly with the confidence that we're gained from that fantastic run over the course of March. I think Hearts will know they're in for a game on Saturday, despite the fact that they won so convincingly in the last meeting at Tynecastle.
Well, I think you're right. I think if you look at the three games this season, we've been comprehensively gubbed in both trips to Tynecastle, even the one, I think it was only 2-0 away back in August, I think it was. But they ran over the top of us that night as well. But the 2-each game at Fir Park was completely different. It was a bit more even. And I think that was even under Ian Barraclough at the time, if I remember rightly. So hopefully with Mark McGee in charge, we'll be in a more set up properly to take them on. They're a big side. That's the only thing I always fear again. They've got a cliche about them this year. They're a big, powerful side. And I think that's what we struggle against. So hopefully the centre-backs can step up and whether it be McManus and Kennedy or McManus and Hall can stand up to the challenge. Maybe we'll see Louis Lang coming at right back as well, if he's back fit again, instead of George Law, to try and combat that as well. But this is always a game I look forward to. Ever since I was a youngster, Hearts has always been a big rivalry in the old Texaco Cup, and we were relegated at the same time, so this always brings big passion back for me, and you'll maybe hear that on Saturday as well from me, because I just don't like the Hearts, and I just hope we absolutely murder them and give them payback for the 6-0 game.
That's a game that could have turned a season, Jay, the 6-0 defeat at Tynecastle. The team have responded very well in recent weeks, and now they can play with a slight degree of pressure off them. There's only three places up for grabs. Hearts have already clinched third or second, along with Aberdeen. Aberdeen and Celtic will fight it out for the title. So between ourselves, County and St Johnstone, we'll decide the rest of the places. And that's a nice position to be in. We're not looking over our shoulders at the teams at the bottom, and that scenario of the playoff again can be completely out of our minds. So you would like to see the team play with a wee bit of freedom, and the guys like Marvin Johnson, Scott McDonald's been in great form, Louis Moult's in great form. Hopefully these guys can go out and really show their worth in these last couple of games.
Yeah, definitely. You'd like to think so. You're right. I mean, you go back not too long ago, and you know we've said it a few times, but during that spell, you know, particularly after the Hearts game, the 6-0 defeat, there was, and particularly obviously before Mark McGee even came in as well, there was always that nagging feeling that, you know, Kilmarnock just needed to maybe get a wee run together, or could Mixu turn it around at Tannadice and suddenly we could be staring relegation in the face again. So to now find ourselves getting into the top six fixtures, or the post-split fixtures in the top six, there is that kind of weight has been taken off. And I suppose in terms of survival and in terms of where we were, you know, 6-9 months ago, then there is pressure taking off. But as we said earlier, if we're looking to finish as high up the table as possible, then there should still be the pressure on that comes with expectation and comes with ambition and wanting to win football matches. The game on Saturday will be interesting. I think that if we can approach the game and show the same sort of confidence and motivation and organisation like we did prior to the Celtic fixture, then Hearts will definitely be in for the game. The Celtic fixture was disappointing for me personally. We spoke about it last week with Louis Moult. We gave them far, far too much respect that Celtic have done nothing this season to deserve. They've been poor. But we stood off them far too much. We seemed frightened. We seemed nervous, and we gave them far too much respect. And if we do the same again on Saturday, then Hearts will beat us. And we can't afford to get into the game and be that scared and that tentative in terms of how we approach the game. It's our home fixture. We have been on a great run prior to the game against Celtic. We should go into the game, we should attack, we should be confident in our own ability. And if we take the game at Hearts, then I think we can certainly win. And you know, if you're going to be looking to cement fourth place, then your home fixtures, including Saturday's games, are the ones you're going to have to win. So I hope we can win, obviously, but I certainly think if we approach the game in the correct manner, like we did prior to Saturday, last Saturday, then we will win, because I think we're good enough now.
Graham, knowing Mark McGee that little bit better, you'll know how much that defeat earlier in the year hurt. Will he be going into this game with that slightly in the back of his mind and have the team up for gaining that degree of revenge? Because, as you say, it was a sickening performance. It was as poor as we've been all season. And it really looked at that point that we were in a real dogfight. I know he's obviously picked the team up and the results have improved a lot, but an experienced manager like that would surely still have that in the back of his mind going into the next meeting between the two teams.
I don't know if he will, Andy. He's actually very good at kind of, once a game's gone, it's kind of gone. Even if it's a win, he'll tell you that after most of the games that, yep, well, it's been great to win this one or lose this one. We need to focus on the next game. And I think that's what will be in his mind. He may bring it back up. He may bring it up as a reminder for them that if they're sloppy again, that's what could happen. But I think he'll be more focused on making sure that the team's set up properly for this one. There's no doubt, you know, Ross Clarkson and the scouting team will have done their job looking at Hearts over the last two or three games again. How have they changed? Obviously, Sow's away, but Wanma's back playing up front. So does that change the dynamic of their side at all? They've brought in, from the United, Suter, is it? Brought in him from United. Does that change how they play? So he'll be more focused on this game and probably really pretty much forgotten about the game back at Christmas time. And I think that's probably the right way to go, is actually just focus on this one. Focus on what we've done in recent times. How we look at what Hearts have done, and then, as Jay says, concentrate on our own form and go out and attack them and take the game to them.
And when Mark McGee conducts his post-match interviews, does he shake your hand afterwards?
He usually says, well done, boys. See you next week.
That's a bit more than Ronnie Dowie got the other week, that's for sure. Jay, we'll move on to this week's Remember Well question. It was kind of inspired by the penalty shootout in Saturday's Hibs versus the Dundee United game, but I suppose penalty shootouts have been the theme of the weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you set the question. I think it's probably, was it not more inspired by the penalty before the shootout during the game from Jason Cummings, quite possibly the worst penalty of all time, because as Neil McCann said after the game, it wasn't about Hibs or the fans or the Cup semi-final, it was just 100% about Jason Cummings going for that daft wee lob, the Panenka. But so the question, quite simply, looking for your favourite missed penalties by an opposition team against Motherwell and the Motherwell misses that were tough to take. So we've got Ian Pritchard says the Scottish Cup against Aberdeen at Fir Park. We lost 2-1 in 2012. Higdon missed a crucial penalty. We absolutely pummeled Aberdeen that day. Lasley got sent off and we still gave them a doing. Dave Scott, Tom Hatley missing one with 10 minutes to go at Parkhead and Jamie Murphy's last game for the club was a Serbian. Jerry McDermott, Pataudry March 1979, Aberdeen 0, Motherwell, Aberdeen 8, Motherwell 0. A certain individual missed a penalty that evening which could have changed history, as it may not have turned into a record defeat. To this day he maintains that he didn't miss it, but Bobby Clark saved it. Bobby Steelman goes with Jamie Murphy's penalty miss versus Odense, Niall Kane, Mark Walters when he ballooned it over the bar and we went on and won 3-0 at Fir Park. Stuart Marr, Griffiths missed last week. David Blacklaw, big softy in the Cup semi. Over on Twitter we had Martin Venables, O'Brien versus Rangers was a saddie. Colin goes with Murphy against Odense. Another mention for Mark Walters for Davy McDonald. Jones A goes with Nonce away, no question, celebrated like a winning goal. Never seen a non-cup final winning penalty save celebrated like that. Craig Hargrave, one I always remember was Tommy Coyne missing at 2-1 down in the 93-94 Cup at Tannadice. Philip and equalised, lost the replay 1-0. Mitch goes with Nonce away, must be up there. I'm surprised he couldn't remember it after he fell off a statue and lost his head open. Andrew Patterson goes with Softie in the League Cup semi-final against Celtic. Mid-80s was a hard one to take. Gunnar Nielsen v Celtic in the 3-each game kept chances of setting the live. Shafuti goes with Hatley at Parkhead in a game we were dominating. Celtic then broke after the miss and a 1-0 loss for us. Ian Walters again, George Farker, Wayne Foster after he had poleaxed Cammy Duncan, and a great save by the legendary Stevie Kirk. Stuart Tweedley, think the two mentioned against the Dense and Rangers were the worst misses of ours. Martin Mackay, surely got to be Griffiths last week. Neil says, I mind Darren Jackson firing one about 6 yards wide up the south stand end for Celtic, which was funny. Mark Weir, Mo Johnson missing for Hearts up at Tynecastle in 1983. We went on to win 3-2. Scott Anderson and Stuart Gunn both say Forbes in the 6-each game with Hibs is one I unfortunately remember well. I think that was the one that actually jumped to my mind when I read your question, Sparrow. I think I was never Ross Forbes' biggest fan. He had a great left foot, but don't think there was much more to his game. And I just remember thinking he was the worst guy alive when he missed that penalty. But thankfully, obviously, Lucas managed the net equaliser. So I'll throw it open to you guys. Any good misses against Motherwell or any terrible ones for Motherwell?
Well, the two that I was thinking of when you said the question was a John Philbin one in a League Cup semi-final at Hampden against Celtic. We still go to a penalty shootout. I think we'd been winning 2-0. I think Andy Walker had scored 2 goals. It was all square crossbars and big softy man said whack it straight off the face of it, so he had no chance of the rebound even getting over the line. And I think my favourite miss was the one that was mentioned, Stevie Kirk saved at Tynecastle when he took in goals after Cammy Duncan had been injured after only 2 minutes, and I think we held on and won that game, and Big Kirky still talks about that one to this day about saving the penalty at Tynecastle.
I actually saw the MK Dons striker, the MK Dons goalkeeper was sent off at the weekend. And the striker went in goals and saved the penalty. And straight away on Twitter, even people that weren't Motherwell fans mentioning Stevie Kirk. So that would have been a nice wee ego boost for him at the weekend to remind him of something that happened over 20 years ago.
Maybe over 30 years ago, Andy.
Is that right? That's me denying my age there. The one that I kind of remembered is the Scottish League Cup. I think it must have been 2005, the 1-0 win over Aberdeen. And Graham Smith saved a penalty really, really early on in that game. Went on to win 1-0. I would love to tell you who took it, but he did the whole Nonce thing a few years early. He went down and tied his lace. Saying that, it might actually have been the year that we lost 2-1 to Celtic in the semi-final, actually, the following year, 2006. But he made a great save, and obviously we went on to win that game, so that was a fairly decent one. I can't think of any that haven't been mentioned, though, in terms of misses.
I don't think any that I can think of have been mentioned. Haven't been mentioned. Obviously, when talk about opposition missing, the first one that came to my mind was the Graham Smith and Nonsi as well, because as it was pointed out, celebrated that like, you know, we'd scored the goal rather than we'd not conceded one. For penalties that we've missed, the first couple that came to my mind, was it Jim O'Brien, the one that was mentioned with Rangers, that one, and I can't remember what one it was, but Jamie Murphy missed one against somebody, and it was the softest shot in the world. Tell him it was, you know, after a couple of pints, tell him it was a big powder puff shot, and it immediately blocked me. So, you know, I've never seen a Twitter update for Jamie Murphy since.
Another one that sprung to mind, John Sutton, Flamur Tarry. Thankfully, obviously, the second leg meant that it wasn't a big deal. But his miss for the retaking penalty kick in Albania just kind of sprung to mind there as well.
I was just looking up that game. It was 2005. Brian Kerr scored a cracker. It was Jamie Smith that missed the penalty. And then Smith that also saved the rebound. I've managed to get it up. A wee bit of highlights, so I'm multitasking here, quite impressive. The Brian one was one that I actually had to look back on. I couldn't remember it off the top of my head, but that sounds like a sore penalty miss, the opportunity to beat Rangers with a late penalty. These opportunities don't present themselves very often.
Yeah, for what I remember it as well, it was perfect height, not sort of cliched perfect height, and you know, just inside the post, perfect height for the goalkeeper. And I think it must have been Alan McGregor, I think, but it was, you know, it was right there for the goal to save, and he just had to go the right way, and he saved it. And I can't, as Marty put it, it was a right Saturday.
So just get towards wrapping up, but Graham, firstly, thanks very much for giving up your time tonight. We much appreciate it.
Pleasure.
And just looking ahead to these last five games, you'll be looking forward to adding your own slant on them in the Muddle FC audio commentary, which is really taken off again this season after an absence of a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm delighted we got it back. I enjoyed doing it the first time, and people did start to ask what were we going to get it back. I think partly because, as you mentioned earlier about the Ross County game, some of the coverage on the Nationals is not brilliant. And at least if we're doing it, it might not be BBC quality, but you're getting it from the heart, you're getting it from your own club. I think people appreciate that, to be honest. I'm effectively just a fan with a microphone. I'm very fortunate to be in the position to do it. And hopefully people do seem to enjoy it this year. I know we took a bit of stick previously, and I think that was part of my own. Board passion is inconsistent and poor refereeing. You may have picked that up over the years. And I kind of tried to tone that down a bit this time, and try to just concentrate on what's happening. I think Scott Mullin's been a big camera influence, coming in and joining me on the commentary this time, and I think that's helped. I think a lot of people said they quite like the conversational style at times, so we'll just try to take the feedback and make it as good as we can make it. And I think the couple of clips the club will put up with the two goals against Aberdeen and the one against Inverness just do show the passion that we have for the club and the passion for what we do.
So the Marvin Johnson goal, how dirty were these looks on that day, and did you make it out of the ground safely?
We've been getting them all game, to be fair, because Inverness is sitting right behind some of their season ticket holders, so they hear every word that you say. So every time there was a strong tackle in the middle of the park from an Inverness player, we're obviously looking for me to be booked. And if it was the other way around, we were kind of saying the model player was the injured party all the time, so we were getting dirty looks from them during the game. And of course, when we scored, as you can imagine, last minute goal, sitting beside me was Alan Burrows and Graham MacArthur from the Community Trust, Ross Clarkson doing the filming. And so the five or six of us actually just absolutely reacted like fans, as you probably heard, to be honest. You can even hear it on the highlight clips on Motherwell TV and YouTube as well. And there was people left, the daggers that were looking in our direction. It was really quite funny and in some ways pathetic. So it was a wee bit of just letting them hear it and having a wee dig back at them that we had put away all game and we'll get it run you effectively.
I can remember a time at Pittodrie where we were leading 3-1 and Aberdeen came back. It was a Sunday game and Aberdeen came back to draw 3-3, but Flo had been giving it big ones when we went 3-1 up. And the reaction from the Aberdeen fans as they ran towards the back of the stand in the press box was one of the worst things I've ever experienced. I didn't actually realise that Flo had such a turn of pace until that day either.
The worst one for him, Andy, was actually the day we won 1-0 with Craig Reid's goal at the end of the game. Again, Flo and I just went absolutely bananas. And I think we actually pulled the microphones out and lost the feed, to be fair. And I turned round and a guy actually had Alan pinned against the back wall of the main stand, pointing in his face and saying, "What? No, you need to calm down, what are you doing?" Like, it's only a game of football. And we've just reacted because our team's clinched second place unexpectedly in the last minute.
I can only imagine if the shoe was another foot, they would have just quietly sat there and clapped.
Absolutely.
We'll wrap it up for this week. Jay Buster, thanks very much.
Cheers.
No bother.
Graham, thanks again.
As I said before, pleasure.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back after the Hearts game next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Here we go, we're going away. McManus gets away brilliantly in the 6-yard box. There's a chance for a break here. Finsworth can find Johnson. Johnson in behind the defence. Vaughan Williams has come miles out of his goal. It's
shocking!
It's 2-1 Motherwell! Shocking defending Motherwell! 2-1 Motherwell!
What a finish to this game, Graham! What a finish to this game!
Can't finish it by Marvin Johnson there from the long ball out. Terrible defending by Inverness. 1 minute to go and stop his time now. Fans behind the goal going absolutely mental. We get dirty looks. I don't care.